Do you remember when a guidance counselor told you college could be the best time of your life? Do you remember the counselor saying anything about the process of paying back student loans? No blame intended for the counselor. Enjoying and getting through college takes up a lot of time and attention. And no one especially wants to think ahead to the chore of making student loan payments. But Americans carry more than $1 trillion in student loans now, and many people fall behind. Let's talk about getting ahead on the process. Janae Haas is a senior instructor in criminology and criminal justice at Southern Oregon University, and she's worked as a financial literacy advisor in a number of different venues, and she's our guest to talk about student loans today. Janae, welcome to The Exchange.
Thanks. Good morning, Jeffrey.
Tell us a bit about your background and some of the places, because this is an interesting mix of skills here, criminology and criminal justice, and also financial advisor.
I don't think they're very closely related, except that these days I do see students who are dealing with the worrisome thought of student loans and having to pay those back when they finish school. In terms of my background, I was a legal services lawyer for a couple of decades. And in that capacity, I worked only with very low-income people. Many of them were just overwhelmed with debt of all kinds, but some of that debt did include old student loans that were hovering at the margins of their lives and making it very difficult for them to move forward.
That's an interesting concept to think about, the hovering of this of the student loan at the margin of your life. But the fact is that it is one of those things that it's a very persistent sort of thing, isn't it?
It does not go away. It's like child support. It's like tax obligations. The government is out there waiting to be paid back.
So what are some of the things that you are working in criminology and criminal justice at Southern Oregon University, but you do give the occasional seminar apparently on some level of financial literacy as regards student loans. What's the number one piece of advice you give?
The number one piece of advice I give is probably have a budget and make it an annual budget as opposed to a monthly budget. Financial literacy experts have found that people under about the age of 29 who maintain a monthly budget will underestimate their living expenses by a whopping 43%.
That's a staggering number. Why so much? They make the budget in the summertime when they're not paying the heating bills or something?
When people think about their lives month to month, they think about rent, they think about heat, they think about their internet and telephone bills, but they don't necessarily think about emergencies. They don't think about that $4 latte that they're using their student loan money to pay for that will ultimately cost $18. They don't think about expenses that don't come up monthly. So for many people, buying new tires for the car, replacing batteries for things, going to parties, all of these things are things that people do not factor into their expenses. When younger people sit back and calculate their budget on an annual basis rather than a monthly basis, they're more likely to come within a couple of percentage points, or 2 or 3 percentage points, of what they are actually spending.
Is that because they're factoring in some of the things that might be surprises, like car repairs and supplies for things that wear out around the house?
Sure. I mean, if you walked around your house, you'd look in the bathroom, you'd see shampoo bottles, you'd see razors, you'd see soap. Under the kitchen sink, you'd see the dishwashing detergent. You'd see cleaning supplies. You might discover in the broom closet a broom. You don't buy those very often, or a vacuum cleaner bags, things that we just don't see as day-to-day expenses that we would factor in. And they actually are a huge percentage of our budgets.
And some of those things, as you point out, like vacuum cleaner bags, you're not going to buy monthly, but when you do have to buy them, they sock you for stuff you didn't expect if you do a monthly budget.
Right.
So, Janae, even before somebody takes out a student loan, are there some good things to think about in terms of making plans for the days when it will have to be repaid?
I think so. The obvious answer to that is borrow as little as you possibly can. And the corollary to that, I guess, is to the extent that you can get federal loans, federally subsidized loans, and you can avoid private loans from credit unions and banks and other lenders, the better off you'll be. There are two reasons for that. One is that most of those private loans will have higher interest rates just out of the gate. The interest on those accrues the whole time that you are using the money. So that's one reason. The second reason is that the federal loans come with some protections for people who have unexpected inability to repay those loans. So there are terms that you can negotiate as a government loan recipient that simply don't exist in that private market.
What makes the difference then between qualifying for a federal loan and having to go with the private loan?
There are a number of factors, and I don't think I can answer that question accurately, but in a general way, if your income is low, you're going to qualify for some federal loans that are need-based, and there are other federal loans that are not strictly need-based that you can qualify for as well, even if your income is somewhat higher.
We're talking about repaying student loans and keeping organized financially for people who are just about to get out and have just gotten out of college. Janae Haas is a senior instructor in criminology and criminal justice at Southern Oregon University with extensive experience in giving people financial advice. Join us on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. When a graduation is approaching, this apparently is one of the cornerstones of your approach, is to start thinking before you have the piece of paper in hand.
Exactly. Yes.
All right. So, what sorts of things should we? Is this the point at which, first of all, the annual budget? When we talked about that, is that something you should be making while you're still a student?
Absolutely. There is nothing like getting that big fat check at the beginning of the term. And forgetting that it is not your own money. It's very, very easy to go to a bar that you wouldn't have gone to, get that tattoo that you wouldn't have gotten, get that piercing you wouldn't have gotten, dye your hair purple when you couldn't have afforded to otherwise. I mean, the reality is you still can't afford it. And so for students, it's really, really important to think about living now on grubs and berries so that you don't have to forage in the woods for your next meal once you have finished school.
That's a lovely symbolism there, grubs and berries and foraging in the woods. But the point is that, and I was going to ask you about this too when we get back to annual budgets, is the idea that you have to be conscious enough of what you can afford over the course of the year so that month by month you'll be able to make better decisions, which means that you might come to things like skipping the tattoo with the purple hair, or in my mind it was the spring break trip.
Oh, yes. There's that too.
Lots of stuff to leave out here. So so be budgeting while you're in college, and then once you've reached graduation, I mean, there's so much to think about trying to land the job after graduation and all that sort of thing. So what steps should you be taking in that process to think about your financial future and when the loans come due?
Something that everyone needs to know is how much he or she actually owes. Because you can't, until you know what your expenses are going to be, plan for those. So students can find out from their lenders, whether it's the government or a private lender, how much money is going to be owed back, and then what the terms are. Often, usually, in fact, when we sign contracts, even when it's for a house that we're buying for a lot of money, we don't read the contract. The bigger the dollar amount is, the less we want to read. So we sign the document. We may not even keep the document. And so students need to find those documents. They need to find out the organization or agency to whom they owe the money, how much the money is, and whether there's any kind of grace period before they have to start paying back.
What is the usual time elapsed between graduation and duty to begin repaying the loans?
That will depend on the loan. But for private loans, there is no grace period. For federal loans or federally subsidized loans, grace period usually ranges from 6 to 9 months. So if a student has a combination of private and federally subsidized loans, it makes sense to start paying back those private loans immediately.
Okay, one more reason to think in terms of the federal or federally subsidized loans, because you,
right.
you get more favorable rates and a bit more of a gap before they need to be repaid. Janae Haas is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about student loans and preparing to pay those back. What do we know about the default rate, the percentage of graduates who do end up getting behind?
More than two-thirds of college graduates or students who leave school for other reasons end up in default on their loans. That's a staggering percentage, and it matters a lot because these days everything is so networked that you cannot possibly keep a good credit rating in this country with those student loans hanging out there. And that can interfere with your ability to get some kinds of jobs. It can interfere with your ability to rent or buy a home. It affects the rates that you have to pay for car insurance. It really does have a huge impact on your life.
So the idea that, oh, well, you know, it's a student loan. I mean, I'll get around to paying it back at some point. The fact is it can really dent your credit rating in a big way.
Absolutely, yes.
So here's a good chance for an aside here. At what point do credit bureaus begin tracking you by name? How do they track you?
The people who lend out money or people who sell you things will report to the national credit bureaus when you start to be late. So if you have a student, not a student loan, let's say you have credit card debt, if your credit card payment is delayed by a day or so, it may not show up on your credit report, but if your credit card payment is more than 30 days late, it affects your credit.
Are there certain things that that take more off of a credit score? For example, not just late payments, but chronic incurrence of late fees, that sort of thing on credit card debt?
Yes, those will keep showing up. And small things like that will affect your credit rating a little bit for a little while. So you may see an impact of a few points in your credit score over a period of 3 or 4 months. But the longer your pattern goes of being delinquent in payments, the more impact it's going to have. You know, how the credit bureaus figure out what your score is going to be and how they figure out sort of the risk factor in late payments is proprietary information. You know, they don't tell us that. So what I'm describing to you is a fairly general assessment of what it looks as if they are using to calculate that information.
So then what rights do consumers, whether college students recently or just, just currently college students or anybody have to examine the information that credit bureaus have or to, mm-hmm. To challenge it?
If you are, for example, a victim of identity theft, you have a right to get a free copy of your credit report from the three national credit bureaus for free. As a consumer, you have the right to get a copy of those reports annually for free so that you can track what's going on. As a practical matter, your credit score changes every time you buy something, every time you pay something.
Really? So it's, now, could you potentially emerge from college if you've never incurred any credit card debt, for example? I mean, you haven't even begun to pay your student loans, you haven't defaulted mm-hmm. there. I mean, could you emerge from college with a pristine credit rating?
Well, if you've never borrowed anything, you won't emerge from college or anywhere else with any kind of credit rating because your credit rating is based on your credit history. If you use credit responsibly, then your credit rating will be excellent. If you don't use credit responsibly or if you incur a large amount of debt, that means that the risk for creditors has gone up. And so that will affect your credit rating and it will be somewhat less than perfect.
Okay, so keep your payments on time for everything you do in life. Make a monthly budget, and for sure, if you're getting a student loan, know what it is you're borrowing. So all good advice all around. Janae Haas is a senior instructor in criminology and criminal justice at Southern Oregon University, and obviously skilled as a financial advisor as well. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
You bet.